A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome to the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson. And today, we are joined by Kim Coleman. She's the Executive Director of Children First Education Fund. It's a scholarship-granting organization located in Utah. And I thank you for joining us today.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
So, first, what is Children First? Can you describe what you guys do? And it's kind of a startup at this point, right?
It is a startup. It's a brand new program that the Utah legislature created last year, came into effect this year. So we're really very, very new. And it's a scholarship granting organization. So that sort of speaks for itself. We offer scholarships for students with disabilities. And those the requirements for that, or the eligibility standards, are would be the same as a student in a public school that qualifies for special education services. So we benefit students that qualify for special education services.
Is it like if you have a 504, is that the type of student?
Or? So 504 tends to be something a little bit different than students who qualify for an IEP, for an individualized education program. So there's a little bit of distinction between those two, the 504 and the IEP program. So this would be on the IEP side. So learning disabilities, disabilities that impact the education of the student and their ability to access their education. So, but very specifically, this is for students who are not in the public system. So
these are kids that are at home right now?
Or? So these may be students that are homeschooled, students that are in a private school. An emerging popular school model is micro schools, pod schooling, where families get together and they may, as a group, hire a teacher or share their skills among each other.
You can do that.
Yeah. I'm curious, though, what if I have a child in the public education system now? Because I don't have money to go to a private school, right? Couldn't I apply for this? Or how does it work?
The reason why it doesn't really apply to students who are in the public school is because the federal government and our state government guarantees a full range, continuum of services, accommodations, and so forth for students with disabilities in the public school system. So that robust offering of services and in entitlements to services already exist in the public school. So to have the opportunity for families who have chosen differently for a broad range of reasons, who still have a child with a disability that they're trying to meet the needs for, this scholarship helps them. Not all private schools offer distinct services for children with disabilities. So to have a parent be able to exercise a choice in a private school, but then have some supplemental funds to help with therapies, with materials, services, it's a broad range of things that the scholarship offers. So it may pay for private school tuition, and then it may pay for other materials, fees, online courses, different therapies. Frequently, students with disabilities are accessing speech therapy, occupational therapy, things like that to help them perform as a student and to access their education, accommodations that help them, that help with that disability.
What's the history of these? Say it was something the legislature chose to create. Like, what led to them thinking this was a need.
Has this been done before someplace?
Oh, yeah. So we are not a leader by any stretch. We now join half the country. So we were definitely not first. This has gone on in a lot of states for a long time. I think longest running state is about 17, 18 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a long time. So that's, you know, a lot of students have gone through similar types of programs. So, yeah, Utah is in the middle of the pack coming online with this option for students. And there's a flip side of this. There is the, you know, how does these scholarships get paid for? So what the legislature also did was they created a tax credit advantage for people who are willing to support this program and to support these scholarships. And in Utah, we offer a 100% one-to-one state income tax credit if you support the scholarship fund. So every dollar you donate to this fund is a dollar taken right off the top of your tax, your state income tax burden. So it's not a deduction where deductions work by, you know, you
percentage
get
of this,
add up all your deductions and whatever's left, then you're taxed on that amount. No, this is whatever amount you're taxed, this comes right off the top. And there are several states that offer that, but not all of them. So we have a pretty good policy here in Utah to encourage taxpayers to support this. So
does this take money away from typical public schools?
So it's probably important to note that this is a very, very small fraction of what we spend on education. It's 1/10 of 1% of our state appropriations for public education. So it's a very, very small amount. It is, you know, we spend about $6 billion. This is a $6 million scholarship. So it's very, very little.
And how many kids do you feel like that may be able to help?
That should be able to help about 1,000 students.
Which sounds like a lot, but and certainly for those kids, that's important. But it's,
oh, absolutely.
In terms of the overall need, is that going to reach all the kids you'd hope to reach?
So to give you some context, we serve over 650,000 students in the public education system in Utah. This is only going to maybe serve about 1,000. So out of 650.
But how many of those 650 are disabled? You know, they would qualify for
about 80,000. So typically, the population generally has about 12 to 15% of its students, really kind of in any general population that would be eligible under, you know, federal laws for disabilities and the definitions of disabilities for students. So yeah, about 80,000 students would qualify as a student with a disability. So you know, we hope to serve about 1,000 of those. And of course, it's brand new this year. Mm-hmm. We hope to grow. We hope that maybe that $6 million figure raises. We hope that maybe even more students in need. Particularly one I'm watching is one that Florida just passed a few years ago that benefits students that are having maybe they're being bullied. They've been assaulted in school. Some mental health challenges that come with that. And I think we are seeing a need definitely in our society for helping students that are having those kinds of challenges. So I'm a big fan of hoping we see something like that, even maybe lower income families. So right now, though, the scholarship is just available to students with disabilities.
I want to get a sense of, so does this take them out of the traditional school? Or, these kids are already out of traditional school, so...
Out of public school.
So there's a little bit of both. So our scholarship ranges from $4,000 to almost $10,000, and that is based on income. But also, if you're a student who is already outside of the public system, you're already being homeschooled or private schooled, you're only eligible for the smaller amount. If you are a student who is leaving the public school, that scholarship has a larger amount. So it offers a little bit more support for students who haven't already exercised the option to not be in the public school. Mm-hmm. So it really is meant to capture more new students and giving that new option.
So it will help. So there are kids who are in public school now. They're struggling and their parents are looking for options. Maybe they can't afford it.
Right.
And they could say, oh, this is an option for me. you know, we'll do it. How do we apply for this?
Absolutely. Yeah. So families maybe that would like to exercise the option but can't afford it, knowing that the scholarship is out there might help them with that choice. We have about 32 private schools that participate in the program. So there is a state component of approving the private school that can participate. We hope to bring more online, and the scholarship itself might even help kind of spur the availability of private schools as well.
I got a little bit less than a minute. So why is it taking so long to kind of, if all these other states have already been doing this for up to 17 years, why is it taking Utah so long to kind of catch on?
I don't know. That is a really, really good question. No. I don't know. Okay. People have tried it over the years. And
Let's talk about that after, because I think I have some idea of why people are resistant to this. Yeah.
Okay. We're speaking today with Kim Coleman. She's the executive director of Children First Education Fund. It's a scholarship granting organization that helps kids who are disabled to have other issues in our educational system. And we want to help every kid thrive. So this is certainly one of those ways we can do that. We'll continue our discussion. You're listening to Voices of Reason.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are back. Jason Lee, Amy Donaldson, Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason, speaking today with Kim Coleman, Executive Director of Children First Education Fund that grants scholarships, a newly developed organization that is hoping to grant scholarships to kids who have a lot of special needs, but the education system as it works, and these are private school kids in a lot of cases, just doesn't meet the needs of these children. Now, Amy, as it turns out, had a situation where something like this might have helped you.
Yeah, I mean, I took my kids out of my older daughter out of public school and put her in a private school after going through a reading program in the summer to try to catch my daughter up.
How old was she at the time?
She was in first grade. Mm-hmm. And I tried really hard to work with the school. In fact, you know, because I covered education, I knew people in the district and I talked with them at length about what some of my concerns were. And I think my beef with public school, which I am a huge supporter of, is that it's really hard to work at your own pace in public school. Public school teachers have the hardest job, in my opinion, because they have to bring all these different levels and different learning styles, and they have to bring everyone along at the same pace. Or like there's a, you know, it's really a remarkable thing what we do in public schools, and I admire it. My concern is that a working mom, I didn't have the time to do some of the stuff that I volunteered in the classroom. But so we did this summer program. I was super impressed with the reading program. Jason and I both talked about, we both have dyslexia. I just felt like I wanted her to have that advantage. I thought this will help her in life.
Was she dyslexic too?
No. But the problem I see is what happens with kids, and anybody who has kids can probably attest to this. If they figure out that they don't have to do something, they don't do it. So you work to what you need, right? Like there's very few kids who are like, I'm going over and above, right? It's what do I need? I've heard this in my college classes when I was in college. What do I need to pass this class? What do I need? What do you want from me? And I'll do that rather than let's learn this. Let's explore this idea. Let's do this thing together, right? And I found that I just happened to find a school where that was the idea wasn't, what do you need to get a passing grade to move up a grade level? This was, what can you do in an hour and a half with these kids in reading, right? Like, what can each kid do? And the kids worked at their own pace. You had sixth graders in a class with first graders, and no, but there wasn't stigma because you were, the goal was to learn what you could, right? So I loved, but they could do that because it was smaller, private, you know, they could do that. But there, you know, there are trade-offs. There's definitely a lack of diversity. There's a lack of socioeconomic diversity, a lack of racial diversity. And I felt, and they try to do things to rectify it, but it's difficult when you don't have, it's not just paying tuition. You have to be able to drive your kid across the valley. You have to be able to pick your kid up in the middle of a workday. There are a lot of things that come into play. And there are things that your kids want to do at school that cost money. And it's a difficult...
Which is everything now.
Yeah. And, it, and yeah. It's really a difficult lift for parents. And I think this idea that even though we continue, I think we should continue to invest and support, and I do, I'm fully invested in my public schools, but I felt sort of abandoned on this. Like, okay, I took a part-time job at my kid's school to try to help pay for the tuition. And then they asked me all the time, like, can you help us bring kids in who are from your socioeconomic area? But they couldn't do, they couldn't drive across town. They couldn't, you know, they didn't have two cars or, and I think this is one of the things I was excited about when I saw this on the Facebook page of a mutual friend was this is an option. It's not an option for everybody, and it's not the option everybody wants, but it's like we need more choices, not fewer choices.
So how would this help?
So this past year has been dubbed the year of school choice. I mean, and we've never seen the public be so supportive of school choice as they have the last year. And it's nationally 74% of people support school choice. And so
school choice in what? Can you explain that a little bit?
School choice very generally. Can Amy walk her child to a school that best meets those needs? And I think as I was listening to your story, I think there's the scenario of the parent that just wants to have the needs of the child met with the disability. And the school maybe is doing their best, but it's limited. And so you want to find the best school to meet the needs of the disability. The other side of that, closely related to that, is maybe you want school choice, a different school for other reasons, mm-hmm. but you feel like you're inadequate to meet the disability needs. And so whatever your motivator is to seek choice, you shouldn't be limited mm-hmm. in finding the right thing for your child, especially the child with a disability. And so this scholarship is income-based. Mm-hmm. So on a sliding scale, the higher the income, the lower the award, lower income, the higher award. So that does start to equalize, and that opportunity for students with low income does give parents hope that if I choose a school for another reason, and we've got in the news every day school board meetings, stuff happening. Mm-hmm. And so whatever your reason is that you want something different for your child, you don't have to be limited by income when it comes to your student with a disability.
So, like, for me, I don't have kids in school, but I've been paying for them since I was 25 years old, because that's when I started owning the property. You know, I'm public school is important because I went to public school my whole life. And I feel like I don't want these kids who either want to go or don't have a lot of other choices to then have their already limited funding, you know, spread out so that other people can, you know, I know school choice is important. I'm not trying to diminish that, but I don't want it to be at anybody else's expense. And so for somebody like me, how does the program like this, you know, alleviate some of that worry I have?
So one of the great things is we are seeing these students have exponentially improved success in education. That is an investment. However that impacts the public school, that is an investment of our state generally that has a generational impact on our economy and future generations being able to contribute to the economy. But what's great also across the country is where we've seen these states implement these programs, we're seeing about a 4-to-1 savings. So for that $1,000 donation that's receiving a tax credit, it's saving the state anywhere from $2,000 to $4,000 for that student. So it's that is a net benefit on the financial side, but then on the bigger picture side of the future and the, those future citizens that are accessing an education that's better meeting their needs has, you know, an immeasurable impact over time and a generation.
Okay.
And I also think that like my kids went back into public school, Daphne for middle school and Rachel for high school, at the high school level, because they did want to have like a more, a wider, you know, sort of more public education experience. And I think that's probably the case with a lot of parents. Like they are doing what they can to help their, especially kids with disabilities. When you start behind or when you start at a disadvantage, it's hard to, and there's so many ways in which it happens. And I guess, do you hear from parents? Are you hearing about these kinds of things? What are you hearing from the people who are?
Well, I mean, for us, we're brand new. So yeah. we are excited to kind of put together the baseline data this year and then watch those long-term effects and mm-hmm. short-term effects. But in the life of a child, it's such a small time. And the year in the life of a child is so impactful. They can't wait for the grown-ups to figure out their mm-hmm. mess, right?
Yeah.
And so to be able to empower parents more to just do what's great and best for their child. I mean, we've just got to get there, and we've got to get there to a greater degree. Utah is generally pretty good with school choice. We have long had a system where you're not necessarily locked into your neighborhood school. You can exercise a special permit and go to a school across the district or even into another mm-hmm. district. That's a plus for Utah. But, you know, frequently those better schools have waiting lists or, you know, there's no room. We have a robust charter school system with pluses and minuses. So this has really been called the new frontier in public education choices is really empowering the parent to make very, very specialized decisions about their child with a disability. And again, we have these 32 private schools that participate, but we also have what's called an education scholarship account, which is new. There's only a handful of states that have that.
Let's talk about that when we come back. We're talking education today. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Amy Donaldson, Jason Lee, Voices of Reason, talking today education with Kim Coleman, Executive Director of Children First Education Fund. You guys you're developing a program to give scholarships, grant scholarships to kids, generally speaking, special needs or disabilities. How do you
children with disabilities?
Disabilities. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, I love the idea of helping children any way you can. Though I went to public schools in working class neighborhoods. So, you know, we didn't have deep pockets. And even though I hear what you're saying is helping these kids, if I had a young kid and I don't want them to, I don't want them to go to a school that already doesn't have a lot and then find that, because school choice sounds great in theory, but the same way I don't get to choose, you know, all the things about utilities I pay with my taxes and all these things, I feel like we're trying to give everybody when it comes to education, like we want to change that whole model so that people like can send their kids to private school with their public money. I'm like, well, that's not how it works. We're trying to benefit the entire community rather than, you know, allow you to take your money and put it to where you want. If you want to send your kid to private school, do that. Mm-hmm. But the there's a reason why our society is better served by having strong public education available to every kid, whether they have money or not. And mm-hmm. and so when I'm listening to this, again, I'm all for what you're trying to do, and I'm not trying to diminish that in any way. But I still want to understand how this can be done in a way that doesn't hurt kids whose choices aren't quite as broad as what you're describing.
Right. So you're talking about the system,
yeah.
And I think what nationally we are seeing much more movement toward funding students and not systems.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're the parent and you're living those restrictions and you're living facing that, whatever is not working for your child, and again, your child does not have a lifetime to wait for systems to change and systems to adapt. And so I support definitely in the public system that we have, creating choice even within the public school system. But if it's just not working for your child and you need the lifeboat, this is one of those. And you kind of noted that your experience with public school was great. My experience with public school was also fine. But I am talking to parents every day that it's not fine for their mm-hmm. child. And tell a mother that you have no options. You're keeping that child in the school. And, you know, a mom will move, you know, and a dad will move mountains for their
yeah.
child. We are helping. We're helping with that. So again, the ultimate
can you
impact.
Do both? That's a question.
Yeah, I that's where I wanted to jump in. I think for us, because my husband had a real resistance to sending our kids to private school, also because he's a product of the public school and he feels like it's your patriotic duty, you know, to have good public investment. Mm-hmm. And I agree with that. And I said, we can do both. I go to the car wash at my high school. You know, I try my best in every way. I buy the Christmas wrap I don't need. And, you know, the fundraisers at the
overpriced.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know,
great quality.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm like, actually, it's really, and I'm like, no one's allowed to use this because it's the fundraiser paper. So not the Walmart paper. But I think that you can be of a mind. And my thing was, I didn't want people to think this is like a backdoor to what we debated in the 90s and early 2000s, which is you get a tax, you get a credit, you take your money and you go to a private school.
That's true.
Because that's what I was.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think this is different in that it's addressing a need that's already existing and it's actually going to make it possible for people who are sort of on that bubble, which is where I lived. But we should still be at my kids were not in public. They were in private school. I was teaching at a private school and I was supporting my local public school. You know, we go to the carnivals, I am fine with the tax increases. I voted for them. And so I feel like you can do both. And I think you should do both because everyone isn't, but don't take from me a choice because you're afraid I'm not going to support the public school.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that choice also provides a little bit of competition as well, which I think is also healthy. And so does it help the local public school, you know, maybe want to do better? And if a child leaves for whatever reasons, mm-hmm. does that help them reconsider that, you know, what can we do differently?
That's been an interesting thing to me because I don't know an educator or an administrator who doesn't want to be better, right? Like they want to offer all this stuff. They just don't have the money.
Yeah, they may not have the money. They may just not exactly know how. But so nationally, there's a world of tax credit scholarships, mm-hmm. which we have. There's also what's called education scholarship accounts. And these are both just new frontiers. And with both programs, we do fund a range of things. But on the education scholarship account side, this is the part where we do fund a parent the certain amount of the scholarship. And then they kind of use that as almost like a savings account that they can then spend it on a wide range of educational needs. And so that's very, very empowering. Mostly what we're seeing that used for is therapy, is that speech therapy, occupational therapy, different types of specific therapies related to the disability. That's never been done in our state. So it's not just helping students go to private school. This is supplementing and helping lots of parents that need that extra support. And, you know, we hear all the time that the school gives half an hour a week of speech therapy, but privately, they're in speech therapy for 4 hours a week. Mm-hmm. And you know, the parent deciding and the clinician deciding what is best for that student, we empower that now through this scholarship. So it, it really is a wide range of options. And I want to emphasize, too, that nationally we are seeing anywhere from a 2 to 4% or 4 to 1 savings of the taxpayers. Typically, students with disabilities, they are receiving specialized services in the districts. There are additional costs to that. Mm-hmm. So for the money that this 0.1% of what we spend on education kind of being set aside for this choice right now, the net effect has historically been that's a savings. So that's more money that stays in the system and benefiting the other students that are in the system. So it's just a win-win. And again, if you're someone who wants to support that, the state has said that you can take your donations right off the top of your state income tax. Mm-hmm. So we're fundraising all the time. We love your donation. Look at what you're going to owe local state Uncle Sam in April. And if you donate to that now, it provides those scholarships. But at the same time, it's just a wash. It's mm-hmm. it's not even money out of your pocket. It's right. money that was going to the state. But again, just a little trickle. It's just a little bit of that.
Well, we got to start somewhere, right? We're speaking today with Kim Coleman, who is trying to change, hopefully for the better, our education system, particularly as it relates to helping kids with disabilities. We'll continue our discussion. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Voices of Reason, Jason Lee, Amy Donaldson, today speaking with Kim Coleman, who's the executive director of Children First Education Fund, which is a scholarship granting organization. And so, Amy's, I guess, going to ask, Kim, how did you even get into this?
You tell us a little bit about your background. Yeah.
So I do have a background in school choice. Started one of the earliest charter schools in Utah way back in like 2005, 2006. So,
isn't
so
it amazing that was 15 years ago.
I know.
Yeah. I just hate to know.
long time ago. We've seen thousands of students come through our school, and just watching generally the movement across the nation, charter schools don't solve every problem either. Mm-hmm. So, providing even more resources for families and more choices for families is, I just think that's always a better.
Had you been an educator?
A better. So I was a public administrator. I've been a private school teacher. And so a lot of background in education.
Yeah. And you got teachers,
then got involved in politics.
I have 5 kids. My husband is Joel Coleman, who runs the statewide schools for deaf and blind. So he has 100% of his students, have disability. And so we know a little bit about disabilities, a little bit about education and a little bit about choice. And I did serve in the legislature where also, supported choice and choice policies. So I don't think anybody wants to harm the public school system. We mm-hmm. always want improvements. But I love that we're using the language even that we want to support funding kids, funding the students, and not be so caught up in the system. Mm-hmm. But how can we best benefit every child?
How will it work for homeschool kids?
So homeschooled kids are also eligible for the scholarship. So, mm-hmm. and there are a lot of homeschool kids with disabilities, and mm-hmm. that may be the reason a parent chose to homeschool.
I almost did this because my daughter had a congenital heart defect. Yeah.
Right. And
yeah.
how overwhelming could that possibly be for a parent that feels like they want to homeschool, but they don't know, they don't feel qualified.
Hard though, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I was like, I could teach my kids reading and writing, but they would never be able to do math. No, I mean, you have to think of the things you learn in school.
Anybody thinks this teaching kids is easy is nuts.
I don't think that's easy. But if you have a student with a child with a disability, that may self-limit your choices. But this scholarship can then come in and supplement what you're doing at home and provide those additional therapies, those additional supports, coursework, things like that. And Like I said, we're seeing a movement across the country of micro-schooling where parents get together and they may hire their own teacher. And again, if there's a student with special needs in that cohort, this scholarship can help.
You mentioned, though, resources. It's limited, right? So you have to apply. That mean, and now that you've really described to me that there are, 80,000 kids, and we're only talking 1,000 of them, we still need to serve those other 79,000
right.
kids.
Mm-hmm.
How do we do that in a way that is, affordable and just feasible even?
So again, the students who are in the public school system have a broad range of educational rights under federal law and under state law. And I would encourage you, if you are a parent and you feel like your child's needs are not being met, you have options. There are advocacy groups out there, and you can appeal. There is a long line of appeal options if you feel like the school is not adequately serving your student. Then do your thing. Advocate for your child and ask for an appeal. And it can be appealed then to the district. It can be appealed to the state, eventually or ultimately to the courts. And so I absolutely encourage you, as a parent with a child with a disability in the public school, to advocate to the nth degree for your child, mm-hmm. a little whatever that takes. And again, the system is full of people who want to do their best. And mm-hmm. sometimes it just takes a little extra assertive nudging mm-hmm. or just information. Sometimes that education team may not know exactly what's best for your child. Ask them to try something different.
Well, what if you don't know what to ask for, right? Like that, I think that is a common thing that I see is I see my kids struggling. I've been told they have, A or B issue. Maybe they're on the spectrum, but they're mm-hmm. pretty high functioning. I don't know what's available. This is the thing I found out when you have a kid with a medical issue. You have to become a researcher and take a part-time medical classes to be able to ask for the right things. And I don't know why there isn't some way to say, if you have kids with these issues, these are the things that are available to you. I learn every day about programs that exist that would really save people's lives. Yeah. And they didn't know they existed.
I don't have an answer for that.
Yeah.
But that is often the difference, with the parents who do their deep dives and mm-hmm. they learn their rights. It should be a little bit more presented to parents rather than the parents have to go. But that's not always the way it works. But a public school IEP team does require to have some expertise on that team. And so ask your questions as a parent. Do your homework. We have found hundreds of Facebook groups for parent advocacy where they are sharing information with each other, sharing good resources, support for each other. Sometimes, mm-hmm. Parents really need that support in a community mm-hmm. of support. We have found ourselves in a position of feeling like, we want to provide some of those extra resources, at least, point parents in the right direction. But mm-hmm.
Are there advocacy groups you would recommend, or are they available on your website? And can you give us your website information?
So I would say Utah Parent Center is kind of one of the prominent ones in our state right now. And, you can search Facebook for the disability, the geography, the mm-hmm. Your city. There's almost endless groups that can help, that provide or at least share resources, information, support, things like that. But if you're a parent who is trying to make the decision or who has made the decision that your neighborhood school maybe just isn't right, it isn't mm-hmm. enough, this scholarship may help your child exercise more choice.
And
what's your website?
It is childrenfirsteducationfund.org. And so we would love, we're not going to give away 1,000 scholarships this year. I'll tell you, we're brand new, still getting the word out. So mm-hmm. if you know anybody who has a child with a disability, please send them our way. Mm-hmm. We're going to have.
We want to have you back on and talk about some of the ways in which this has helped kids.
Yes.
Because to me, that's the thing. I think when you find out your kid has a disability, when you get that diagnosis or when you have that conversation with a teacher or a school official, it can be, incredibly discouraging. You may think like, oh, this is limiting my kids' options for the rest of their lives. And I would say that is not the case. And that's sort of what you're hoping will happen.
Right. I mean, this really opens up all the options, mm-hmm. again, for those services, for those materials, coursework, private institutions as well. So it's the largest range of choice that we've provided students and parents in Utah. On the donor side, we'd sure love you. Look at your taxes for December 31st is right around the corner. So, sometimes people start looking at that.
Actually,
when Christmas
this is good
is
timing.
Out of the way.
This really is
the time. And so, it's you get to choose. Do you want your state income tax to go to the state, or can you help a couple students?
That's right.
So mm-hmm.
that's childrenfirsteducationfund.org. Kim Coleman, right. Thank you very much for joining
us. Thank you.
Thanks
for having me.
Join us again for the next episode of the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. If you have any comments about the show, please contact us via email at voramed@gmail.com or at vorjasonl@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter at @adonsports and at @jasonlee1. Our show's Twitter handle is @vorpodcast. You can also check out our Facebook page. Look for our and subscribe to free episodes of our podcast in all the places where you find interesting podcasts, Google Podcasts, Apple, any place else, Spotify. And we'd love to get your feedback. If you get a chance, please review our show. It helps us grow our audience. But until next time, along with Amy Donaldson, I'm Jason Lee. When you engage in passionate debate, do your best to keep your dialogue civil. Try to be the voice of reason.
Voices of Reason is a production of the Loudmouth Project.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.